copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
My name is Renee. I was born and raised in São Paulo, Brazil, and have moved to Rome, Italy 10 years ago. We celebrate 10 years anniversary, our 20th year anniversary on Tuesday, so 10 years ago, to plant a church, which have done in the in Rome's university neighborhood. Close to the, Rome has the largest university in Europe, so we started the church right next to it, my wife and I and a team. And the church is now 8 years old. It's called Opera, and I'll share a lot of what we have learned so far. I thought of, let me start sharing here a presentation. There you go. So hopefully you'll be able to see that. Okay. Yep. So you can, hopefully you can be able to see me and the slides. So this is our topic for today, leading an externally focused evangelistic church. And I realized that as a first session in this network, I think it's fitting because I think we'll talk about a number of evangelistic issues over time, like how to communicate or one-on-one and with people. And this grows out of a framework in which puts this local church as a center of an evangelistic hub for all kinds of different evangelistic approaches, which I think have a number of approaches available. And I think when they converge and use the strengths of a local church, they get to be very powerful, very encouraging. So that's what I thought about sharing here with you guys. Before I go into our session, so I just thought about and sharing a question is so we can share brief answers, have some participation. So how do churches usually approach evangelism in your context? And what elements do you think are usually missing? If you can have a few short answers to that, please.
Well, if I can add something. I think that most often it's maybe event-based evangelism. And what I see that maybe is lacking is a personal relationship. Mm-hmm. And then having a friend, not just knowing somebody from who's not Christian, but having a friendship with non-Christians and evangelizing that way.
Yeah, great, wonderful. Thank you. That's great. Others?
I would probably echo that. And what we have seen here in the UK is not only event-based, but the focus is getting them into the church for the church service and seeing the church service as the main evangelistic event.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, within our church in Buckingham, most of the time it's course based. You know, so they'll be trying to emphasize people to come along and join an Alpha course or something like that, for example. Personally, I'm involved in a motorsport ministry, so we're actually involved because Jesus saves racing. So we actually take our racing car to circuits and we evangelize in that way. So it's a slightly different twist on it. But not everybody thinks it's up to something. They just think we're having fun.
Good. All right. Thank you. Someone else, a final person?
Yeah, I guess the other thing I would suggest is a lot of it's like leadership based, so that the leaders are doing most of the work rather than individuals.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Oh, I appreciate that. It's great to see that people are... I have a group of people who are thinking about that already and who are considering that. So what I'll share some of those, some points which will touch those points, and I agree with a lot of what you said. That's the name of our church here at church. It's called Opera. And first of all, the first things I thought of showing to you is just like my favorite pictures are baptisms. When people come to make a profession of faith, we as a church, we don't have a church building of our own, so we go to a lake outside of Rome, and it's a big deal for adults to get baptized here because only children are baptized in Roman Catholic context, right? So it's a very special day for us. And the first thing I wanted to convey, as many of you have must have seen in other places in Europe, like it's very hard soil, But God is powerful, and God is reaching people, and people are making decisions for him here and at so many other places. So this is the oldest person we have baptized so far. Yeah, I think he was 71 back then. It was beautiful just to hear his testimony. And I said, I've been a sinner. I asked forgiveness. I want to be baptized. I was beautiful. And this is another person who was baptized as well at the lake. So I think the first thing I wanted to convey is very much possible, and it's happening, and God is at work. So what I thought of sharing with you guys, the topics, I thought of breaking our session in two parts. First, about a nurturing, a witnessing community, and how we can do complex evangelism in a number of ways, through events and other things. And then we have some discussion time in groups. And then nurturing a discipleship pathway, a process in which we can carry along and bring people along with us. So I was missing this slide. But so let's go to the first thing I wanted to share. Is that a thing, effective evangelism grows out of, in the local church context, out of a witnessing community, a holistic approach, which doesn't depend only on leaders, as someone has mentioned, and it's not only event-based, though it uses events, or not only courses, though it uses courses as well, but it's a holistic, the whole community becomes a witnessing community. Okay, there we go. In which the first element is a vision to reach non-believers and grow mature disciples. A vision which is vivid, which is communicated constantly a number of times a year, and which is celebrated by what we do and the decisions we take. And when a local church has a clear vision, we are here not just to perpetuate what we've done so far, or because we've done things in the past so far, and let's keep on, but we really want to reach and make the efforts of doing that. Out of that, grow, someone has talked about worship, I think it was Beth, right, Beth? I think it's not only the only element, for sure, but I think it's one of them, worship and preaching that engages culture and non-believers. I think it's a very important key point in which we can do, I think, wonderful evangelistic events in themselves, but if the worship doesn't connect with everything else, I think we lose a lot of the effort we do. So try to have a worship and preaching. I won't get into that, or just laying that out. Worship and preaching that engages culture and non-believers, and when they come, it becomes a regular part of church life, in which almost every Sunday there's someone new. We greet people, we welcome people, and have the dynamic going on. Then also encourage believers to nurture friendships with outsiders. I think it's a very much an element which is often missing, in which sometimes we do wonderful events, we have very creative ideas, but our people, our congregations, are not nurturing relationships with outsiders, don't have people to invite to. Even if you have the most amazing thing going on, we have to really build it as a part of our cultures, that we take constant time to build relationship with neighbors, with coworkers, with roommates, with family members, with friends, so these people then can be invited. Then we celebrate newcomers and friends who invite them. So whenever, at least in our church, we greet and welcome, and if someone wants to come to speak with me after the service, a believer, I always say, wait a minute, let me just go greet the newcomers, and then I'll go speak with you. So we really try to welcome them and nurture that. And create a complex evangelism dynamic with various sorts of connection points and on-ramps in terms of how someone can get inside and connect with the rest of the community through personal friendships, through secret groups, through events, a number of things doing in a complex way, a systematic way, in which we'll connect with a number of people with have different life moments, different interests. Sometimes they have a friendship with an existing believer, sometimes not. Events which are more cerebral, which are more artistic. So a number of things which will connect with people. Here I thought of sharing a little bit of some events. So I think of the process, how we start with different points of contact with people, some examples, and then we'll talk about how to draw them into a process later on. So some examples of events that you may have seen in our context. We've seen it working here in Rome. This is we call the aperitivo evening. So evenings when we have a nice atmosphere with food and a decoration, as you can see, and art and nice atmosphere. So talking about first events, which have their, it's not the only thing, but have their places. This is one example of a Valentine's evening dinner event for couples, and we did it for singles as well. This is that event in which people were interviewed. This is a couple being interviewed where they had discussion questions and something going on. Another example is we did a 70s party in which we tried to engage people over 50. So we thought, let's do a party from the 70s. And it was wonderful. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. A number of people came for the first time. In this aperitivo evening, at least the ones we do at our church, we try to have this welcoming atmosphere with food, decoration, and music, something very nice. A theme. Sometimes there are only social evenings in which people connect and come. Sometimes we have interviews or short talks about a theme like science and faith or group discussions and do that. Then here are some, we try also to see what else is going on in our city. So see artists in our community, for example, like they have launches or opening nights or first theater or photography session or something, which we see them as opportunities of connecting with their network of people. We try to embrace initiatives also that come forward from within our church and also our city, also other ministries, and make partnerships with other ministries. These are two examples. One is called the Mark Drama, which is GBU or IFPS, it has different names in different countries. This is a theatrical production, The Gospel of Mark, being acted out by a group of 15 actors over the course of an hour and a half. It's very powerful. We just partnered with them. People were part of it, and that was beautiful. This was proposed by CRU, a Campus Crusade, Agape, and which is an event for women by women on the International Day of Women, in which they take photos and write them messages for other women and their bodies. And it's became a huge success because women love to share what they have, when I say, with other women, and they come and their discussions come out of that. And also a final, some final examples of also some cerebral events and more engaging ideas. We started doing debates with other groups some time ago. This is the first debate we did with the president of the Italian Association of Atheists and Agnostics. This guy, we did his first event on the existence of God. And then this is one of the professors, also on the existence of God. This is the main university here in Rome. So just a small thing, I think someone has the mic open. If you could please mute that so just can not listen to the phone. Thank you. So this is another debate we did. So in the campus of the main university, in the main area of the campus. And it was wonderful to, though we were challenged, we were engaging with other people, to hear another perspective. And many more people came to that event because we were articulating different perspectives. And it was also, I think, a step of growth for us, not just to organize events in which we can use the gospel on our terms and in our building, but also outside engaging with someone else. So we did repeated this approach. Then we invited the biggest Buddhist group in Italy. So we had a debate with them on the meaning of life. So this is a Buddhist professor. And then the final one, Rome has the largest mosque in Europe. So I invited them to an event about how can religion be a force for peace in the world today. So a leader from the mosque spoke, laid out the Muslim perspective. I laid out the Christian, and then we talked. And this is a picture of that event. One of our guys, this guy is very friendly. He went to and then build respectful friendships with Muslims and reach other people. So some examples of cerebral events as well, which can work well, in which in our perspective, it was very useful to take the initiative, to do one way to someone to invite us, but I took the initiative and contacted these groups and proposed these activities for them. I realized that these events grow out of relationships, so it takes some time to contact them, sit down, build trust, but then propose something. It was helpful to give the event a clear structure. In these cases, for example, each side has a 15-minute slot to present their side. Then we have responses to each other, and then we open for discussions and Q&A. And it was helpful to organize thoughts and have both interaction and perspectives being expressed. Then have a follow-up process in place for those who want to hear more. So in our case, we do a simple questionnaire. How was the event? Do you have suggestions? Would you like to hear more from the Christian or the Buddhist side, for example? And people lay out and give their emails and telephone numbers. One of them is a guy called Gianluca. He came to our, here's this guy in this picture, the one in the middle. He came to our event we did with the Buddhists, invited by a Buddhist friend. He used to work at a Buddhist publishing house, and he gave his contact, came to our secret group the following day, and then over time became a Christian and was baptized, and is training for ministry right now. So it's an example of someone who was, one of these events was useful in his context, in his journey. So now I thought about having us some first group discussion time in small groups, so in which we can discuss some among those things I've shared so far. What approaches would be appropriate in your context? So a few minutes. I'll give the word now to Andrew, our network leader, so we can lay that out. So we can have a brief discussion. What approaches would be appropriate in your context? So we can come back and do the second part at the end.
One of the challenges is to try and organize something where you genuinely engage with people who are outside of the faith. I think that's really challenging. We can put a lot of time and effort and work into an event through the church, which effectively becomes a church event. And you might as well, it might as well be anything. It might as well be, you know, coffee and tea as evangelism, you know, because all it is all church guys getting together for another knees up of whatever that is, a breakfast meeting, a men's meeting, a curry night, a ladies' night, whatever you fancy. But how do you penetrate into the community beyond the church? How do you get to the unsaved? That's the real challenge.
Wonderful. That's very much true. Very much true.
Yeah, I think people are kind of suspicious a priori of events that are organized in a church building. You know, they feel that they associate church buildings with, well, it depends on the culture, I suppose. I mean, for some people, it might be perfectly normal, but it's possibly a better idea for evangelistic events to be organized in the form of sort of interactive meetups, but in a venue that isn't necessarily a church building. I mean, it depends on what the church building is like and how unchurched and suspicious of churches people in that community are. But as a way of kind of bringing them into a church and breaking down those suspicions, maybe some kind of independent venue, well, like some of the events that you were referring, because some of the events that you were describing seem to take place in, apart from, well, outdoors or in kind of cafeteria type settings, but yeah.
Thank you, Roger. Yes. Someone else?
Well, we did these kind of events where different topics, and unfortunately, we as a church, we have a coffee house where people can come from outside, inside the church building, but it's not the church part of the religious, you know, part. So, but the problem for us is somehow, because if we have an event, we had like similarly like 80s, 90s music event, and we even had a non-Christian guy come in and play, you know, acoustic songs. It was very nice. And people came, they got to know us a bit better. But the problem is we advertise event and they come for that event, and now I can't trick them and just, you know, just speak about Jesus. So we have to kind of do very mildly where they don't feel ticked. But then there is always feel of a lack of a, that we didn't give enough of a message. But then, so for us, it was that's kind of an obstacle. and how to move from, yeah, we are having fun, to, you know, doing something substantial, something more than just making relationships.
Very much true. Yeah, so to pick things up, then move to the second part, I think I'd love to have more time with discussions. I think these are very good observations, like the challenge of really engaging people outside the church. It is hard, like as David said. I think the building and location, as Roger said, like it has an importance as well. And these events we did, it was outside. We don't have a church building, so we can use one. And I think this honesty part, Zoltan, as you mentioned, is very important. People like come to something as advertised. What we do, we have events in which, in moments in general, in which we share sometimes nothing of the faith. It's just like in the 70s, it was just a party. And we got to know people individually and then invited them to something else. It's more like a presentation. Sometimes just a thought which leads to an invitation. So I think it's appropriate to respect the nature of the event you're proposing and to organize a number of them with different approaches. Some can be quite explicit, some not so. And I think a multiplicity of those will touch people in different life moments in each interests and moments of faith. So I thought about sharing the second part of the presentation now. Let me put it here. There we go. Okay. To think of a discipleship pathway in which I think it's very useful to think of a process from unengaged and not interested in faith to someone who is growing and committed to Christ. We can do a many more complex path. I just put three parts in which friendships or events, something which we engage someone on the outside. Then there's the second step of discovery phase, those who are interested in what we do offer for them. And then growth in faith and discipleship, which churches are usually better focusing at. I talked about the first part in the beginning, even though I know it was very brief and very fast. So I thought of talking about the second part now, this discovery phase. Because I think often churches also sometimes do organize events or expect people to come, but they don't have anything else to help them people discover the faith and grow in it. We kind of expect decisions for Christ almost to happen automatically, like a godsend. And sometimes we don't know if someone's a believer or not, and that we're afraid of asking. And so we're kind of this middle ground, right? So talking about that, the approach we use here in our church, there are a number of possible approaches around, like Alpha Course or Christianity Explored, a number of them. I thought of sharing the one we've seen working well in our context, which are secret groups, secret Bible studies, and which take place in our home. This is our living room. This is one of those groups. This is usually led by my wife and I. She's the one sitting in the middle in green. The reason these work well in our context is this, because usually these groups are small. This is the largest group we've had. But sometimes we have between 3 and 10 seekers, usually. We do them twice a year. And so a video like Alpha, or it's kind of too much for a small group, kind of this is a discussion. And also Christianity Explorer is a booklet. It's more of a course. I think it's more... It may fit people who are more interested or have already made a decision for Christ. Well, here in Italy, the context and the culture is very relational. Italians love to talk and express their opinions and hearing others. And so it works well with food and then lead a discussion in which they're part of it. So let me explain a little bit about how we do the secret groups, which have been working well when people come to Christ every semester over the past years. First, just to recover the first point, the beginning, they grow out of incarnational evangelism, friendships, and a vibrant witnessing community. A church, a group of Christians in which are really practicing those relationships, that trust, building the network of friends. Otherwise, we don't have seekers to invite to. So it presupposes that. Then we offer to people who are interested a limited initial commitment. We usually do let's do an 8-week cycle in which we come and we offer them a chance to explore the faith as adults. because most Italians have heard something about Christianity as children, or maybe were baptized into the Catholic Church and then dropped out. That is the most common story. So we offer them the chance to, very honestly, as Zoltan mentioned, we don't say that this is just food and then bring the Bible. Just say, no, this is a group for those who want to explore as adults what who Jesus is and what is the Christian faith. So we try to be very explicit. And people who come are really on board and they're interested in that. Another element we keep the Christians out and make this a safe space for the seekers to search. If we have a number of Christians, more than 50%, then the nature of the group changes. And people who are seekers maybe express something, a doubt or a heresy or something they think, and the Christians go on top of them and want to correct them and rebuke them, and sometimes with not much sensitivity. So what we do, we lead the group ourselves and we have an apprentice. Otherwise, most of the groups is made of seekers. And it makes a safe atmosphere for them in which they feel, oh, this is our space. We can hear, say whatever, and we'll be heard and respected. And it really opens up. And it really gives them a moment, a journey, to get with other Christians, other seekers, sorry, in which they say, okay, I have this safe space in which you can explore and ask questions and see if I want this for me or not. The ingredients we use is very relational, but what we usually have is food. It's always important. We order pizza and eat pizza here at home. We engage a gospel story in which I put here some of the examples of, we just printed the story on a page and distribute so people can, even if they never open the Bible, just engage with those stories and make a discussion out of that. So the prodigal son, the prayer bowl, or Jesus meeting the Samaritan woman in John 4, or comparing the reactions of Mary Magdalene and Thomas to Jesus in John 20, or Jesus calling Peter, follow me in Luke 5, or the paralytic being brought down from the city in Mark 2, or Jesus and Nicodemus in John 3. So this is these great stories in which someone usually interacts with Jesus and there a story comes out of that. And we start just leading a discussion, asking questions, helping people imagine that and making this story bring them to life. So people can share and it becomes very vivid in our discussion. And then we draw to our application in the end. So we do this for a number of weeks. And when we think the gospel becomes clear for people, we invite them for dinner individually as a person or as a couple, as a family, and just have some one-on-one time with them in which we notice where they are. Have they understood the gospel? Do they have questions? Is this the moment to invite them to a decision or not? If not, we say, okay, let's meet again. Maybe you can read the gospel of John, for example, in a month, and then we can meet again in a month's time. And then, but then if the person is ready, then we invite them to a decision. We explain the gospel anew, invite them to a decision, and usually pray with them. And I think if the moment is right, I think this has combined so far the creativity and the multiplicity of events with the power of a group and a process together, then with one-on-one engagement to see where this person is at exactly. And doing that well, I think then it brings to mature decisions for Christ are just not a result of a moment in an event or raising a hand somewhere, but throughout this process in which we got to know this person, and when we see they make this decision, it's usually very solid. So of course, there's Mark chapter 4, the parable of the sower. Some decisions don't last over time, but they usually, many do. And then we usually celebrate those decisions. We invite, have that person to come back to the group next week to share with the other seekers what that person has gone through. And then they just explain the gospel in how they lived it out in their own words. And it's just beautiful. And they become the best evangelists. These new Christians become the best evangelists to others in the groups and to other friends and want to invite others. And here is one some more examples of stories. This is the guy became a Christian to the left, the guy Luca, the one who was embracing the Muslims. And then this was his sister and brother-in-law, who were baptized as well. And then we've just seen a number of decisions come to Christ through thinking of that approach of a process in which people can come along and discover faith. This is a friend of my wife's. And this is a final story I wanted to share in which is very meaningful to us. These are three neighbors of ours. We live in a building on the fifth floor. There are two apartments, ours and theirs, these three women. The two in the middle used to live there, and then the third started attending our church. Paula was baptized and moved to their apartment by coincidence and got a room there. And she started sharing the gospel with her roommates. First, the one with the red hair, Mireille, she's French. She started coming to church in our secret group in her flip-flops, just crossing the hall, and became a Christian last spring, 1 year ago. And then in the fall was the time of Roberta, the one in the middle, who also became a Christian. She hasn't been baptized yet. She became a Christian in November. And it's just so meaningful to us because they're from our neighbors. And it was just beautiful to see the gospel in action and to see that God can really reach people. Sometimes once we got home and we heard worship music coming out of their apartment, and we thought it was a beautiful image of how God really can reach people and even households, right? And these three women living across from us. And this is a final picture of Gianluca, the guy who was first came to the event with the Buddhists, helping me baptize someone else, a doctor here in our church. So I thought of now having some final question and answer time, some interaction before we have to close. Sorry again for the technological difficulties, but I still wanted to have some interactions. And also, if someone wants resources, these are some resources I recommend if you want to take a picture of the screen to read further. So I will stop sharing the screen right now so we can have some discussion right now and see what can resonate and what discipleship pathway do you think would be relevant or you have seen working in your own context? Okay, there you go. Love to hear from you guys.
There were already two questions on chat. Rene, if you'd like to maybe take a look at that.
Okay.
What is incarnational evangelism? It was one from Andrzej Kępczyński. Mm-hmm. And then the second one, do you have a lot of people reaching the point where they are ready to make a decision?
Okay, can you repeat? Okay. Do you have a lot of people reaching the point where they are ready to make a decision?
Good.
Okay. By incarnational evangelism, I mean, like what Jesus did, right? He didn't throw leaflets out of heaven nor commute from between heaven and earth, but he became a man. And he entered that community, that village, that time in Galilee. So we want to, in the same way, not live away from our Christian neighbors, our non-believing neighbors, but build friendships with people at work, in our buildings, at the gym, at our schools, whatever. I think just this... this way of incarnating into our communities, we have to be really present as Christians and not just go meet on Sunday and then not be active throughout the week. And we have a lot of people reaching the point where they are ready to make a decision. We do over time, not of course, not always, but it's a process in which people over the years, each in their own speed, in their own moment, we have the almost by now nurturing this vision of a witnessing community. Almost every Sunday, we have people, newcomers coming to church, invited by someone or found us on the internet. And then we do these constant events. And then we do the secret groups every twice a year. And then every year, we have people making decisions and being baptized. So I think it's worth to persevere, to nurture this over time, not just to do one thing or one push, but it's something we keep doing on over time, and then we see people engaging and getting interested in making decisions. Yeah. Other questions or comments?
Well, I would have a question or two. The first question is concerning the seeker groups. So I guess, or I'm asking, so how those seeker groups look like? You have food and you do the Luke 15 or whatever verses. So is that inductive Bible study where everybody kind of chips in and you just lead, or you are presenting the kind of a speaker? So that's one question. The second question, so how are you sharing the vision or training your church to do the same? And are there other groups where other leaders, like you split the group or something, you know, where other leaders will now have their seeker groups? And so how you share the vision and train?
Okay.
So maybe,
you
don't have to answer if it's too long, but.
Yes, good question. Yes. The way we do seeker groups, we do it in a way in which we lead a discussion. So there is someone who's coordinating the discussion, but we want very much to be a lively discussion. So we don't do presentations. Well, that could work, of course, but I think these groups are usually small, and it works if you keep a conversation. We often ask a lot of questions, like, for example, Jesus and the Samaritan woman. So why was she at the well at that time? Who was she? Why did Jesus say that? And people start answering as much as they can. And we try to lead the discussion toward the conclusion to the point of text. So I think when done well, it becomes beautiful, because I think it's a group dynamic in which the spirit is also present often, and to see the group coming together, see Jesus, it's beautiful. And then we do convey a vision for evangelism to our church repeatedly, at least twice a year in the beginning of semester. We do it to everybody in language in which we would be welcome, also by people who are not believers yet or new believers. We try to communicate in a way in which everybody, we've seen that often non-believers or seekers and new believers are the best evangelists. They don't have the barriers we do have, and they have a lot of relationships with non-believers. So they're often, someone who comes to faith will be someone who brings the next person, who will bring the next person, and when they have, it's just good.
Can you tell us a little bit about the church plants that you're doing and how are they going, kind of what they look like, or brief update kind of thing?
Good, wonderful. Yes, we our church now is 8 years old. We have about 150 people. It was part of our DNA to essentially welcome church planters in our church for 1 or 2 years, mentor them, and then send them out to plant other churches. So our first daughter church is in the city of Perugia, which is a university city in central Italy. An Italian leader, a very capable guy, who used to work with Campus Crusade, but was part of our church here in Rome, and got a vision of planting a church of his own. And he moved there in 2014, planted a church, which is going great, which is wonderful, doing very similar work and reaching people there. And the third church is a Brazilian couple. Then these are from the outside, in which spent 2 or 3 years with us, and is now currently planting a church, not launched yet, across Rome, close to the Sea, 40 minutes from where we are. So we try to both raise leaders from within, and sometimes welcome people from without, but we can at least see a working church, how it's working, and then take the best out of it, and then develop their vision and plant a new church somewhere else. We're part of a network called Redeemer City to City, so it also, they have resources and conferences and for church plans, which is very helpful as well.
We have 1 minute left. Maybe time for last quick question.
I don't know if it's a quick question, but one of the challenges I think that we face, I'm in Madrid, Spain, and we're in a new church plant that's also connected with city to city. Right. But it's the first part you talked about, the friendships and activities. How do you help a church or church members who maybe that's not been the way they've approached things before? They don't have always a large circle of non-believing friends, or they're intimidated, not sure, but wondered how you help your church in that first step.
Yeah, no, great question, Janice. A great question. I think first, leading by example. So as we planted our church, my wife and I were part of numerous communities. Like, we took our baby to baby lessons for babies, just to get to know other families. My wife took me to a dancing class. I hated it, just so we could get to know people. The first guy was baptized, we got to know him in a dancing class. See, people see you doing the effort. And in the beginning, we were the ones who brought new believers to church. And over time, people got this, and the culture was formed. So I realized it does take time for that to happen. What I usually say to people is just invest in the friends they already have with them. Just nurture friendships. Sometimes it is with coworkers, sometimes with roommates, sometimes with parent family members. Just be there and nurture those friendships. Often these do not bring to a spiritual interest, but if the whole community is trying to build those over time, someone out of someone will develop an interest as time goes by. So it's not something which works instantly, but nurturing well year after year, then we see that this kind of snowballs. It becomes a very lively dynamic, which then takes place. Sorry to answer it very shortly.
Thank you so much, René, and thank you everyone for the questions. We just have finished the first session with a little bit of troubles, but René, you did excellent job. Thank you. What I would suggest that we would make 1 2-minute break, or let's stay online on this session. Let's not break out. Just 1 minute restroom break, 2 minutes restroom break, and let's come back. We have Stephen McCoy, who is another phenomenal speaker and a great, great guy. I'm sure you will love the next session as well. So let's just stay in, and then we'll start in 2 minutes. Okay?
Great All to right. be with you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, René.
Thank you, René. Well done.
Stephen, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. You getting ready?
I'm ready whenever you are.
Okay, we'll have another 2 minutes, but let me just make for the quick introduction about, because I couldn't get online for the beginning to just say, you know, about what the do's and don'ts. So let me just do that, and then it'll be all you. When you send people to the breakout rooms, I would like to ask them to introduce themselves to each other, so at least we make some kind of community online.
Sure.
So just if you have your 8 minute discussion group, you know, should just please remember maybe first 3, 4, 5, 4 minutes will be for people to just start talking to each other.
That's no problem. I was also going to say that Bev and Jerry are controlling my PowerPoint as well. They have the stuff.
They are out of power. They have no internet right now.
Ah.
So we're on our own.
Okay. I'll see if I can find the stuff now.
Yes.
Hey, guys, we're back for a little bit.
Oh, they're back. Okay, great.
Yeah.
We still don't have power, but we're working on hotspot.
Okay.
And you have the PowerPoint there, okay?
Now, do you need the PowerPoint for this one or for your workshop?
It's the one that says a bound strategy for evangelism.
Okay, we got to look for that real quick.
If you can't find it, I'll dig it up. But
it my probably machine would be better.
Behaving brilliantly at the moment, so.
You know what, Stephen, I hate to say this, but it would be better if you could do it this time because of our power issues.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll start.
We're working on battery.
Okay. All right. I think we've just lost Jerry and Bev.
Okay, I'm trying. I'll dig out this PowerPoint.
Okay.
And see how I can do a screen save or screen share.
So while you're doing this, let me once again introduce everyone. Bon appetit, André. Hope you're having a good snack. I hope everyone is back. We're 4:01. So good to have you guys. Because we were all late, we couldn't do the breakout rooms as it should be. So we will do it this session. Now, the breakout rooms, the groups, were supposed to be 6 to 8 people because we were supposed to be 40. But 20, it looks like 25 showed up for the online ELF. So you might end up in a smaller group. The leaders who have agreed to be part of the small groups, they will try to navigate the discussion, and then maybe if a speaker asks to kind of summarize what you have been talking about in your group, leaders, please do that. One group doesn't have a leader, so if you're in a group where nobody takes responsibility for leadership, please select one. Okay, so then you can report back, and then. So we can go further. And also, when we have the first breakout session, just in your small group, introduce yourself to each other so you know more or less who you're dealing with. And through this, even in these difficult times of the pandemic, we'll be able to maybe a little bit to get to know each other. And the groups are divided into regions. So, for example, Poles. Polish people are all together, so they could be speaking Polish. UK people are together, but not everyone will be speaking their own language. Sorry about that. Okay, Stephen, you started sharing your screen, which is great, but we don't see your presentation yet. We only see that you're trying. Oh, balanced evangelists. Okay,
is that it up?
Yes, it's up. Balanced evangelistic strategy. Brother, it's you now. So if you're ready, please.
I'm ready. Okay, thank you. Sorry for the quick change over here, guys. The TEFLs are meant to be doing all my PowerPoint, but they've got some problems there, technically speaking. So I'll just see if I can operate from here with my old system. So apologies if it's a bit slow. Much of what Renee said earlier on, I'm going to probably come back to again because although I didn't know what he was saying, it fits in very much with the kind of stuff that I want to say. But I want to appeal from a slightly different angle to do all the stuff he was talking about, but to ensure that in our evangelism, we make sure there's a proper balance. And here's why. If you were to take wherever you meet as a church, it might be that you own your own building or you rent a space or whatever. But if you take a square kilometer around your building, the range of people there will be enormous. And if you think of all the members of your church who are spread out across your city or whatever it is that you that you're living, within 100 square meters of their homes, again, the range of people will be enormous. And we cannot hope to have just one standard way of doing evangelism to reach all those folk. It's simply not possible. So from a leadership angle, what we have to think about is how can we produce a wide range of different things that through the sum total of all of them, we begin to start hitting the people that we're trying to target as our target audience. And that is particularly the case here in Europe. I grew up, just to give you my own background, in Africa. Ethiopia was where I spent my childhood, my early teenage years. And back when I was a young child, Ethiopia had about I guess, 500,000 evangelical Christians. It now has 18 million. And in Addis Ababa, which is the capital, you can have a traffic jam on a Sunday because folk are literally blocking the streets trying to get to church because there's a huge spiritual interest. I now live just outside of Glasgow, and on a Sunday, the streets are dead. Because like I suspect the situations where you're coming from, the vast bulk of people in my culture do not care. And we're on this journey with people who try to reach out to them, focusing on our communities with a range of people who will go from people who are either hardened atheists or they follow some other religious grouping, or they just do not care at all, right up to the people who we might have now in our churches who have a significant interest, and everything in between. Now that wide range of people, that's what makes our evangelism efforts difficult. So we need to think, how can we do lots of different things that will try to reach out to those group of people? Now, obviously, in all of our churches, there are going to be things that will hold us back from variety. A big thing is gifting. You might have a small church, might not have many gifted people. So lots of the ideas that even Rennie was talking about, you're already thinking that's not really possible because we just don't have the gift there. Experience too. If what your church has seen and the members of your church have seen, if that's the sum total of their evangelism experience, then any new ideas you give them could terrify them. Likewise, a confidence issue. There may be those outgoing, dynamic, evangelistic types in your church who really want to go out there and win the world for Jesus. Most folk will not be like that. And the lack of confidence holds them back, as well as their own context. Wherever your church is located, wherever your mission field is, will determine what you are able to do or not. Is it an inner city location? Is it a university town? Is it a rural area? A conservative culture, an outgoing culture? Is it quite international? Whatever context you have is going to be a determining factor. But everything boils down to, I think, one of two options. The first option, which I'll spend the first half talking about, is the church-based stuff. And Renee was referring to that kind of a thing where you bring people in, whether it's to a building that you own or to a premises that you rent, and you do some kind of activity with them, or you just do non-church-based stuff where the strategy you have is dependent not on any organized group activities you do, but on individuals being empowered to get out there and to do what God leads them to do in their own context. And I'll talk about that in the second session. Now, for me, I gravitate very much towards the second type. And that's because personally, by disposition, by gifting, I'm an evangelist. So for me, the opportunities don't come primarily, say, in an alpha group. For me, the opportunities come primarily if I'm standing at a bus stop or I've gone with friends of mine to a soccer match, and the casual conversations that I have, that's where, for me, the gospel gets out. But that will only be for some people in your church. Nevertheless, those are the two kind of options. And when we have our first breakout group, I want you to discuss two things. Number one, where do you think the balance is in your church? Is it more that kind of activity-based stuff? Or is it more the empowering individuals where they are to be gospel focused? And why is does your church lean in one direction or the other? Where do the strengths lie? So that's one thing you can discuss. And then secondly, you can maybe ask the question, your particular context, what do you really feel will make the decisive difference? Activity-based or empowering individual-based, and why is that? You can see that within your groups. But let me just, before we go into breakout groups, talk about some of the individual activities that I think you could be thinking about. But before we even get there, some very obvious stuff. What are the advantages and limitations? The church-based stuff, obviously you can have control. Rennie was talking about some of the groups that he managed. Fantastic. And one of the good things for the church members who organize a group like that, they can feel safe there because Christians will be the majority. They can control the atmosphere. It's their territory. They're at home there. But there are some limitations of activity-based stuff. It requires attendance. I think in that first session, one of the guys asked a question, how do you make these activities meaningful to non-Christians, to people who need the gospel, rather than just making it a group of Christians getting together? The reality is that the more you lean towards church-based activity, the bigger problem you will have with utterly unchurched people. Because I suspect in all of our contexts, it doesn't matter how creative the stuff that you do is, you're probably, if your context is like my context, you're probably just going to have a marketplace that's maybe 15% of your community, maybe 20 if you really work hard, not a lot more than it requires attendance. It means that visitors will be, as soon as they walk into that activity, will be slightly guarded. One thing, by the way, I do with my students to illustrate this is we have in my mission a Bible college here on site, and every year I take my students to the local mosque. And I don't give them much of an intro to what life will be like in the mosque. I know the imam in the mosque. They don't. I know what's going to be happening when we walk into that building and we get a tour around the mosque. They don't. And I just want to monitor their faces, their voice intonation, their body language. Now, they're all committed Christians. And when I say to them, look, we're going to go and visit our local mosque, I can immediately see what their facial expressions are telling me. And their pulse begins to beat faster as we walk in. Now, actually, they're in a safe place because I know the local imam. They're quite friendly towards us. But merely walking into a foreign spiritual space that you're not used to can be difficult. Now, again, I don't care how creative your events are or how much you've done pre-work to make people, non-Christians, feel at home coming to whatever it is that you're doing. They will still feel a certain guardedness until they really get to know not just you, but your whole church. Now, I could bring my best friend along who's not a Christian to my church event. He knows me really well. He's comfortable with me. But there are 60, 70 people who he doesn't know. He's not comfortable with them. Those are the big drawbacks. Non-church-based, big advantages. It's where people are. The gospel is, to use Rene's expression, it's incarnated. But there are limitations. You send people out there, and I'll think about this in the second session, there are big dangers. You're asking your people to put themselves in that danger zone so the gospel can go out. Gospel conversation need to be created. That takes training. And you can end up in a situation where if the big focus of your evangelism is out there in the world with individual members doing it and not really relating it to the life of your church community, you could have what I've had on a number of occasions where non-Christians are reached with the gospel, they've become Christians. And then when the news is broken to them, by the way, to be a Christian, you need to be part of a Christian community. They ask the question, well, why? I mean, I'm enjoying just having this conversation with you about Jesus. I'm enjoying my early spiritual life. Why do I have to spoil it all by joining this bunch of weird Christians? I'm interested in Jesus, not the church. You can have those kind of problems. So we'll think about that more in the second half. But let me just, in 2 minutes, run through some very quick things about church-based stuff that I think also helps with the balance. There's the balance of what we do when we bring people into our territory against the balance of reaching people where they are. But even if we do focus on stuff around what our church is doing in our building, in our own safe zone, you need to really unpack that and ask, how can we create balance to still meet as wide a group of people and meet their needs as we possibly can? Take one of my bugbears, evangelistic services. In the UK, which is where I'm operating, a lot of evangelical churches have a weekly, they call it a family service. And you could visit 1,000 churches right across the UK that run family services every Sunday morning to try to reach their community. Again, they're only getting that 5-10% of their community who will be willing to come to a service. And by and large, these services don't do very much at all. They are effective in terms of discipling new Christians or giving kind of gentle, easy access Bible teaching for people who have got a bit of a spiritual interest, but they don't do an awful lot for real evangelism. So if you do want to embark on kind of regular services, then you need to think about it. Is this something you do every week? Or probably my view would be you don't. It's the occasional thing. I'm really not convinced, maybe you can convince me of this, but I'm really not convinced of the value of a kind of a weekly family type seeker-friendly service, just because once you've reached the very few people who are willing to come to a service like that, then you've reached exhaustion point. And you're going to go no further. The value of weekly service, I think, is very, very limited. However, if you make them occasional events and put big effort into it, so it's a special kind of thing, and theme it, then I think it grows in its significance. For example, a few months ago, we had Brexit here in the UK. It's not something I celebrate. I'm very anti-Brexit, I have to say, because I'm very much of a European. But lots of churches use the national conversation of Brexit to suddenly have Brexit-style services, to look at the gospel through the lens of the tension and division that the whole Brexit conversation was causing. And guess what? Some of those services were utterly packed out because they spoke into the national mood and linked what they were trying to do evangelistically with the national mood, and it suddenly becomes relevant. And services that were empty of non-Christians for week after week after week suddenly became full because it was a special event. So evangelistic services, they have their place in a limited fashion, but only if you really think through what you're doing. Renee talked about event evangelism. I don't need to say too much more, because what he said about event evangelism was, I think, brilliant. But what is your goal? I see no point in putting on any event unless at the end of the day you have a clear set of criterion, and then you work backwards. Who are we trying to reach? It's not going to be the whole community, because your event has to be focused. So who are those specific people you're trying to reach? And once you have that target in mind, then work back and organize your entire event based on a specific goal-oriented group of people that you're trying to reach. Age-centered clubs. Again, think about what it is we want to do here. Most churches, when you think about age-centered clubs, they think about a youth club or a kids club. They have their place in the church's activity, but that's not the only group of people. What about a club for pressurized professionals? Or a club for people who are retired, or a club for people who are dealing with bereavement or caring for people with significant chronic illnesses. Events that you have that are going to attract people and be events that build friendship. It doesn't just have to be a youth club. It can be a whole range of different people who need the kind of friendship and sense of community that the church offers. And all of these kind of clubs are a way of developing a relationship and then much later on down the line, bringing in the gospel. So cover the bases, use your imagination. And then Rennie also mentioned courses. Just before we break into our groups, let me just say something about courses. The big question you need to ask when we're thinking about courses that we use for evangelism is not, do we use Alpha or do we use Christianity Explored? Actually, those questions are simple and straightforward. Just use whatever materials you find helpful. Actually, you might even want to write your own materials. I tend to write my own stuff because that's more suitable for my particular socioeconomic grouping. where my church is based. But your resources are not the main issue. The main issue is who are the people in your church you're going to use, because the chemistry you have to create to make a course like this work, the chemistry is not determined by the resources you use. It's by the people who sit around the dinner table with the folk that you bring in. That's the issue. And that's where we really need to be smart. I have found through bitter experience that the people that you get from your church to sit at a table with the non-Christians who are invited, they will either make the whole thing work or kill it stone dead. So who are you going to invite? And I would actually ban some church members from coming to an Alpha course, a Christianity Explored course. Why? Because they're the wrong type of people. They're either way too over-enthusiastic and pushy, or they're quiet and retiring and just won't talk. And suddenly what purports to be a useful evangelistic course ends up being not very effective because the people you brought along from your church have killed the whole thing off. So think about what are we trying to achieve and who do we use to make this most marketable? Now, we're going to go into the groups just now. Andrew, if that's okay. And those two questions that I put at the very beginning, where would you lean towards, church-based stuff or community-based stuff, and why? And then if you think about your particular setting right now, as you look at in your community, what is going to be more effective for you right now? Because that might decide how you go in the future. So let's go into groups just now, please, Andrew.
Yes, Jerry and Bev, who are our moderators, please send us to rooms, send us to rooms. Let's see how this will work.
Great, I can see on my screen Emmanuel. Jagoda.
Okay.
So Stephen, I have you not in a breakout room.
Okay, that's fine.
And I have one person who hasn't joined, but maybe they got up for a minute.
Okay, Nofra, how are you doing, by the way?
We're good. Our power's back.
Oh, good, good. This is an exhausting time for you guys.
It's quite taxing this morning with, the power died, and then we're working on a hot spot, and
I'm flipping in and out sometimes.
Yeah, so all good now.
It's a big pressure. We do a lot of Zoom lectures from our college here, and so the media guy we have is a close friend of mine, and the stress he's under is quite significant.
I can relate now.
But fortunately, there were people that stepped in, and things kept going.
Yeah, we have people all over with ability to fix things. Okay, yeah, the last person, they probably got up and left their computer for a minute, so everybody's in breakout rooms.
Hey guys, can I ask an in-house question? Am I allowed to plug a book I've written that covers some of this detail?
It's your own?
Yes.
Why not? I mean, you're doing the, yeah. Well, because you know, if we were in VSWAM, we have people who write books and they're in the bookstore, so.
Okay.
The answer is yes. You're always allowed to plug your book.
Thank you. Because a lot of the, I've had to obviously rush through lots of material that I'd like to spend more time on, but given the constraints here, I can't do so. But it's all in that book.
Good. Hey, Cass.
Yeah?
How are you?
I'm good. I've never, this is my first time jumping in as a surprise moderator, so. Is your power back on?
Yes. Yeah, we're good.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad.
Yeah. No, we're good. So that was very taxing this morning when all of a sudden, just as we're ready to start, it goes dark. And we didn't know what to, so we were using hotspots and hoping our batteries lasted. So, no, we're fine now. I don't know what this means down here. This too.
Let me know when the 8 minutes is up.
Yeah. In about 3 more minutes. So Stephen, Andrew told us 8 minutes. So yeah. I have like 3 minutes because it takes about a minute to get everybody back.
Sure. That sounds good.
Is that okay?
We can. I think we have to let them know. Isn't there an email we need? We use an email.
We use Zoom account 14 at euroleadership.org.
Zoom account 14?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Euro?
Euroleadership.org. Somebody's back in. I'll admit him, but he's going to be.
I'll continue, by the way, to control the PowerPoint from here because I've already set it up on screen share.
It works much better if you're doing it.
Sure. Yeah, especially, it works better if you do it, especially with all the stuff we've had going on. So.
No, I can understand that.
Because we're also supposed to take attendance, check the attendance list. We're doing chats. Okay, I'm going to close the rooms. Everyone should be coming back shortly.
Okay, looks like folks are starting to come back now.
Yes, we're back.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank you for going so promptly and coming back so promptly. I should just apologize, by the way, for the speed that I had to go through all those slides. 15 minutes isn't very much time. And I'm going to give a shameless plug just now, because all the stuff that I was mentioning that first half, I've put in a book which just came out about 6 weeks ago. It's called Learning to Share the Good News. And a lot of the material you'll find in that book, I'm sure it's available on Amazon, as well as through other Christian distributors as well. Learning to Share the Good News, it'll cover that balanced approach and some of the detail I was giving about how to run different events. It's all included there. I want to move from that kind of church-based stuff, using your own facility, to thinking more about that idea of releasing people and switching your energy, your focus, your strategy away from stuff that you do as a corporate church to empowering individuals where they are. Now, sometimes you kind of have to prepare people for being out there in the big bad world. And one last event that I will mention, which is a kind of a church-based event, but which leads to more community involvement, is what I just call halfway events. And these are events which, in their organizational structure, don't have any proclamation content at all. They're simply just a way of either getting your church and its name known, or getting people in your church to mix more freely with people who are unchurched. Very often the best halfway events are ones that you yourselves don't organize. In my town, for example, the local council puts on a street fair every year, and the main street is blocked off and people can get stalls. And it's not a religious event at all. It's just a way of kind of showing off all that takes place in our town. And as a church, we'd sometimes get a stall there and do face painting and sell books, not just Christian books, but a range of different books. And have a variety of different activities that can take place in the space of that small stall. Now, there is no way of, in a sense, getting the gospel across easily in that kind of a context, but that's not the point. The point is that the whatever logo your church has, whatever name your church uses, it gets that name out there in a very informal, casual way. But it also puts your people in a context where they just have to, in everyday life, have conversations with people. So those halfway events are not evangelistic proclamation events per se. They are just a way of getting the name out there and also getting your people to talk. But I want to think about that whole issue of non-church-based events is the wrong word to use, but non-church-based proclamation, because I think, particularly in Europe, where our population is so secular and so de-churched, and the spiritual interest levels are so low, I think it is the future. I really believe that. And doing things like an Alpha course or a Christianity Explored course or some kind of house group or whatever, that is the end product of what takes place in community. But it's not a simple thing to move your church approach to being out there in the community. Given the difficulties, you'll remember what Jesus said to his disciples in Matthew 10:6. He said, "I'm sending you as sheep amongst wolves." Now, that can genuinely be the case. When you tell people in your church that the responsibility for evangelism is not yours as a leader or a pastor, or even the whole group as a church, but rather it's the responsibility of each individual, and it's on their shoulders. They have to go out there. They have to make the contacts. They need to be incarnated. That can be a difficult message. there are in all of our churches people who are outwardly looking, they're courageous, they're natural evangelists. Plenty of people who aren't that way, and for whom putting responsibility on their shoulders is a terrifying prospect. And they're in situations where it's really difficult being evangelists. You're saying to them, go and talk to your neighbor. What if your neighbor is really hostile? Go speak to your family members who aren't Christians. What if your family members are massively hostile? One of my best friends who witnessed to me and led me to become a convert, he witnessed to me when we were both teenagers, and it's through him that I became a Christian. When he got saved, and he got saved about 18 months before I became a Christian, when he got saved and told his father he'd become a Christian, his father got so angry with him. They lived in a farm, and he kicked him out of the house, and he had to sleep for weeks in the barn because his father was so so furious with his son becoming a Christian. It was a huge thing for him to do. And I currently have some Christian friends whose families are so hostile that when they begin conversations about Christ in their family, it leads to huge rows. It's really difficult. There are difficulties. Jesus does send us as sheep amongst wolves, and we mustn't underestimate the challenge that it'll be for people. And there are some dangers, not just physical dangers, I think, but spiritual dangers as well. We enjoy the physical security of being together as church, and we grow through that. And I'm not suggesting that we drop that at all. But the more we encourage people to leave the safety and the security of our church buildings and our church services and our church gatherings to be out there and to really give time, quality time, to be with people, to share their lives with people. And these are people who may have no spiritual interest, but that's what's involved here. The more vulnerable those people will find themselves in, it is not easy. I don't know how your countries are at the moment with the whole lockdown, but it's been really interesting in UK churches because we haven't been able to meet physically as churches, and I guess that's the case for most people in Europe. I get regular phone calls from Christians who are already feeling that sense of loneliness. Now, they can tune into a church service online just like we're doing here through Zoom. It's not the same. It's not the same. And as I was preparing last night for this, a guy messaged me about 11:30 last night. And he said, can you phone me, please? He said, is it too late for you to phone me? And I messaged him back to say, why? He said, I'm just feeling that sense of loneliness. And this is a young guy who's a committed Christian. He loves Christ, but his church has been in lockdown, as every other UK church has been. It's now into the 9th week. And after 9 weeks of not having a physical gathering with his fellow Christians, he's at breaking point, absolute breaking point. Now, he's tuned in every Sunday to an online service. Not the same. Not the same. And he comes from a family where there are no Christians in his family. His neighborhood has very few Christians living there. His social circle has very few Christians. He's already at breaking point. And that's a committed Christian who's in his early 20s. Now, to encourage our people to leave the security, and much of the evangelism we've been doing has been within that secure setting, to leave that security and to go out there and to use church more as a, we're here to be built up in our church services to gain spiritual strength so we can go out to the world and bring the good news. For you and me as evangelists, that's fine. For lots of folk in our church, we are placing them in danger. And we must not underestimate the challenging situations that we are putting people in if we change the focus to you get out there and reach people for Jesus. Now, it's the way to go, but it's a big deal for people who aren't like us, who aren't natural evangelists or naturally outgoing people. So what do we do with this? How do we move forward? Well, several things. Recruitment is key here. And for me, the best way of recruiting people is to say this. I look out over my congregation and I say to them, all of you have a circle of people. It might be your neighbors. It might be members of your family. It might be some of your social circle. It might be people in your workplace. But there are people that you meet on a daily basis who I will never come across and who will never come to any church event. And you're the only person who's placed there by God to reach those people. That has to be part of our recruitment drive. And I ask people, I want you to count the number of people and write it down, write their names down, the number of people in all those contexts that you know you have a natural relationship with. But if you say to those people, come along to church, you know they won't come. Now, God has placed you in that situation. You're responsible. Now, what do you do to reach them? So, recruitment, first of all. Then envisioning them. I think we need to tell our people stories or get them to share stories with each other about successes they've had in simple gospel conversations. Now, those kind of stories encourage Christians. It doesn't need to be a story that says, you know, I met this guy, I shared the gospel with him, and he became a Christian. Those kind of stories are very, very rare. It can simply be, I was speaking to my neighbor, and we just happened to begin a conversation about spiritual matters or about the afterlife, and I told the person I was a Christian. Simple as that. But help them through sharing stories to see that each of them can take a small step. And as those small steps build, it leads to conversion. Most folk who become Christians, they don't become Christians at their first time hearing the good news. They become Christians because they've had 50 or 60 very small conversations that have built and built and built and accumulated. And eventually, 2 or 3 or 4 years down the line, they trust Christ. But each one of those tiny conversations have played a huge role in building that momentum that leads them to become a Christian. It's those kind of stories, so envisioning them. And then thirdly, giving people support. I've encouraged folk, why don't you go and speak to your neighbor, speak to that person at work, and then come and tell me about that conversation you've had, and I'll pray for you. And actually set up prayer groups to support those folk who are trying to do evangelism. There's one church I speak at sometimes in Korea, in Seoul, in South Korea, which really encourages me in this regard. They're a church of about 200 people, and they do not own their own building. They meet in downtown Seoul, which is a gigantic city, and buying a church building is impossible. It's too expensive. Even finding a big enough place to rent is difficult. They rent a doctor's surgery for 2 hours on a Sunday morning, and that's it. They have no other church meeting of any description. And they don't run any kind of church events per se because they've got no facility to do so. Their entire evangelism program is based on individuals being out there sharing the gospel. But what they do is they meet together in homes to share stories about what God is doing through their witness. And they publish a list of, here's the conversations that we're having. And that list is sent out to all the church members. And they have little details about, this is where this person is at, and these are the conversations I've had with them. This is where they are in the scale of coming closer and closer and closer towards maybe taking a real interest in the gospel. And on any given Sunday, when they send out or give out this list of names that they all have to pray about as church members, on any given Sunday when they give out that list, it could contain 500, 600, 700 names of people. That's the people who the church members have live contact with in their everyday lives. and that's how they pray. Now, their entire evangelistic strategy is based on personal evangelism, individuals doing evangelism, because they have no building. They have no way of organizing group events. So it's all done by individuals. But they support each other through prayer, and they meet in their homes to pray with each other and to share with each other their stories and to encourage each other to keep going in terms of doing this one-on-one evangelism. So support. And then finally, coordination. As you encourage individuals in your church to go out there and to be witnesses for Christ, appoint somebody in your church to coordinate all that effort and ensure that all that wide range of contacts are being prayed for and encouraged. And if one of those church members is struggling, they're having a bad week, it hasn't gone well, who's going to get alongside them and pray with them and encourage them to keep going? So recruit, envision, support, and coordinate. One last thing I just mentioned, and it's the whole issue of discipleship. That problem I started with at the very beginning, in the first session. If the evangelism focus moves towards, or at least gives some credence towards, individuals doing evangelism out there, you will find people who are unchurched folk who our church members are connecting with, developing an interest and growing in their friendship with that one person, but still not necessarily thinking about church. And I have seen situations where friends of mine who are great evangelists out there doing their kingdom work, and they brought people to faith in Christ, and when they introduce the idea of church to those people, it's a big move. It's a big move to try to bring those folk into the body of the church. That doesn't happen automatically. They may have a friendship with that church member who's been doing the witnessing. They have no relationship, no connection with your church. That's a big danger. And so you need to find ways, as individuals in your church are doing their evangelism out there in the community, find ways of bridging that gap and helping them in discipleship, so that the converts, the people who they're interested in the gospel, can engage with the church in some way. And it might be that that's when you begin to use events, not so much to interest folk in the gospel, but events to get those folk who are interested in the gospel, because our church members are out there being witnesses to them, events that can connect them with the body of the church and bring them into a kind of a discipleship relationship with church life. Just to summarize, there are two options, church-based stuff or non-church-based stuff. My personal preference is to use the non-church-based stuff as the key. If individuals in our church can be envisioned where they are with the context they have very naturally, if they can be envisioned and empowered to share the good news, we will reach a much, much bigger group of people than if we just use church-based events. As I said before, it doesn't matter how creative those events are. At the most in Europe, I think we'll get 15 to 20% of the marketplace at the most coming to event, however brilliant is organized. My concern is for the 80%. How are we going to reach them? I think empowering individuals and sending them out as sheep amongst wolves is the only way. There are dangers, but that is the way forward. And I encourage you to think about having that as a major evangelistic strategic thrust as we move forward.